happy to announce that the Fretboard Journal now has three presenting sponsors. These are three brands that are behind us with everything that we do, including the podcasts and the videos, and they include Carter Vintage. Carter Vintage Guitars, where guitar lovers go for a good time. Gibson Guitars, only a Gibson is good enough. And last but not least, Martin Guitars. Martin Guitars and Strings remain the choice for musicians around the world for their unrivaled quality, craftsmanship, and tone. Can't thank these three brands enough for being presenting sponsors. Thank you, guys. Hey, gang. Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm Jason Verlinde, the editor of the Fretboard Journal magazine. And as always, that's John Rauhaus playing in the background. Fretboard Journal celebrating its 15th anniversary during this very uncelebratory year. But regardless of that, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for following us. Hopefully you are subscribing to the Fretboard Journal magazine as well. We have a new issue out in just a few weeks. I can't thank you all enough for tuning in. This is what I'm going to call a bonus episode. I'm not going to stick a number in front of it like I do with our normal episodes. During a normal Fretboard Journal podcast episode, just like an article in our magazine, we try to go deep. We go for an hour or two or longer and try to get the definitive story on something. In this case, it's more of a news item. Gibson, earlier, I guess last month, announced that they were on the hunt for their 1959 Gibson shipping ledgers, which have gone missing for many years. They're offering a $59,000 reward, of course, for these. And this is a news item that got picked up in all sorts of places, including some very mainstream non-guitar outlets. But I wanted to go a little deeper. I wanted to hear more about what they're actually hoping to get out of this book and if they actually know where it is and all that other stuff. So I reached out to Cesar Gurikian, who's been on this podcast before. That's Gibson's CMO, as well as to Matt Kaler, their head of product development. This is the conversation you are about to hear. I will say this interview took place way before all this litigious news that I've heard recently about conflicts between some guitar brands that I truly love, Gibson and Collings and Heritage, as well as Satellite amplifiers. And so we did not address any of that stuff. And I don't really have anything of intelligence to say about that stuff because I am not privy to all the details. I will just say, as a child of the 80s who grew up in a broken home, whenever I hear about this stuff, it reminds me of my childhood. I just want everyone to get along. I want everyone to talk and keep the lawyers and courtrooms at bay, because this is a family and it is a community of people making musical instruments. And I just want everyone to get along. I don't like to hear about all the fighting and arguing and lawyers and stuff. As you'll hear, even in this podcast, we're all a bunch of guitar geeks. We are, of course, sponsored by a couple of brands that I truly love. Mono Cases. You can go to monocreators.com. They sponsor everything that we do. Incredible lineup of gig bags, pedalboard bags, backpacks, studio monitor stands. Everything they do is ergonomic, bulletproof, super simple, so elegantly designed. Go to monocreators.com. Also, our friends over at Retrofret Vintage Guitars in New York City, who happen to have, since we're talking about Gibsons today, a 1956 Gibson J185N. That is, how fitting, one of only 59 natural top J185s from that year. They also have a 1941 Gibson SJ100. That's the 17-inch cowboy style guitar, but this one has seen no campfires. It is incredibly clean and a thing of beauty. So reach out to them about those guitars or anything else. Go check out their new arrivals page. They have something at every price point on the vintage guitar front. Retrofret.com. I just want to thank you all again for tuning into this podcast. Keep sharing it with friends. We also, of course, have a couple of other podcasts that we put out. The Truth About Vintage Amps podcast is kind of the runaway hit of 2020. I had no idea just how many of you would want to listen to two guys talk about vintage amplifiers, vintage amplifier buying and maintenance. I co-host that with Skip Simmons, a very unique, very lovable, but also blunt amp tech who I've known for 25 years. And we field questions from around the world. It's like car talk. There are a lot of laughs. There's a lot of information. I had no idea just how many folks would be listening to it. We're about to put out our 50th episode, which is hard to believe. We're going to have some giveaways for that, but tune into that if you haven't yet. It is a lot of fun. And then, of course, we have Luthier on Luthier, hosted by Michael Bashkin, where he goes deep with fellow guitar makers. All right, Fretboard Journal 46 is going to be out in just a couple of weeks, so subscribe if you haven't yet. We would love to have you aboard our family. And here is Matt and Cesar from Gibson talking about the missing 1959 shipping ledgers And if you happen to be sitting on them or see them on your bookshelf, reach out to ledger@gibson.com because you might be walking away with $59,000, which would be amazing. Maybe send us an email too. I want to see a picture of it before you send it to them. All right, here's my chat with Matt and Cesar. I hope you enjoy it. So you guys recently announced a bounty, basically, on the 1959 Gibson shipping ledgers. I'm curious, whose idea was this, and how did this come to be?
I think it was my idea to do it this way, to actually go out and offer money to go get it. We've always toyed with, or we've always talked about, like, where can we find it? What kind of leads do we have? And, you know, Matt Taylor, who's on the phone, and I have talked about this at length. And I think at one point I said, guys, like, let's not make this our problem or our, you know, our search, and let's not put it all on our shoulders. I think there's enough mystery out there and excitement about the 59 and excitement about, generally speaking, our ledgers, because, you know, whenever we showcased anything out of our ledgers, people go crazy. I mean, I remember two NAMs ago when we brought the 52 ledger that has the entry of the first ever Les Paul that ships out of the factory. I mean, everybody was so excited about that. That I suggested to the team internally, I didn't want to make it a mandate, but I brought up the idea, why don't we launch a search and we offer, you know, given that we're looking for the 59 ledger, let's offer 59,000 for it, and let's get the world out there motivated to go and search for it. And I think that we were going to launch it earlier. At one point, we thought about maybe launching it on May. What did we say, Matt? Was
15 to coincide with the last
May 9th. So 5-9, and then but you know, Jason, we were on to handling the crisis and trying to be, you know, the best Gibson we could be with our artist community, with our fans, and leaning in with music through the COVID pandemic and trying to make music more relevant and loved than ever through the crisis. And so we went home, made music. We went Rolling Stone in my room, Apollo Theater, Gibson TV initiatives, virtual guitar tech. So we did all those things throughout this period, and we kept delaying launching the search for the 59. And then we go June 9th, which is Les Paul's birthday. But we ended up deciding to wait until July. And here we are.
And for folks who don't
know, love a good treasure hunt.
Yeah, for folks who don't know, these are the shipping ledgers, and they exist up through what, 1957, 58, and then there's just sort of this black hole.
Yeah. Okay. Well, for the solid body electric guitars, and I'm going to let Matt step in here, we have records until June of 1958, and then that's when the last ledger that we have ends, and then it picks up again in the next book that we have, which is in early 1961. I don't know, Matthew, if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like for a huge guitar geek like myself, and getting an opportunity to work at Gibson, that was really one of my first mysteries I wanted answered. Is, you know, what do you have record of the most iconic, most famous guitars from our past? And when you see that the 58 book just kind of ends halfway in, and then there's just a spot on the shelf where there's no record of 59, you know, we have to assume that the book was made and you know, in the process of, you know, sometime in the last 40 years was either lost or taken, or, you know, so it's pretty crazy just to imagine that this is probably the most desirable historical record in the guitar world, and we don't know its whereabouts.
Yeah.
And it was stolen. I mean, there's no question about it. It was this book was stolen sometime in the late 70s, probably, or early 80s. And
yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any coincidence, you know.
Somebody took them. And so whether they're still out there or they were lost in a fire, we won't know until we launch the search. But these books were, there is zero chance that, you know, our peers back in the day decided, you know what, June 1958, let's take a vacation from taking records and let's pick it back up in 1961. It's just, these books were taken.
I know there's like a long running joke that in theory there were, 659 bursts and only 1,000 have been found or something. Aside from knowing just aside from knowing just how many were put out into the world, do you guys learn anything from these ledger books when you skim back through the years that you have? Has anything from them translated into a better Gibson guitar today?
Well, I'm going to let Matt answer that question, but I'm going to preempt it with saying we know we made 643.59 bursts, and or that shipped in 1959.
Mm-hmm.
But the answer is yes. I mean, we do learn quite a bit in terms of what we were doing back in the day. We also, you know, Matt, you know, pick up from here, but a lot of times we think something may have shipped first in 1956 or 57. And then by going through the ledgers, we find that in fact, we started shipping it, you know, a couple of months earlier that might put it in the prior year. I'll give you an example in my personal collection. I once came across a double cut Les Paul and I bought it as a consequence of this. But a double cut Les Paul special in a cherry finish. And I knew the guitar was a real authentic Gibson when I held it, I showed it to Matt, and ultimately I bought it. But that guitar was a 1962 guitar, and you could tell that also from the serial number, but you know, that guitar shouldn't exist. So we went into the ledgers and we found it. And so no, yes. Do we learn things every time? I learn a ton every time we open the ledgers. And then, so Matt, you know, if you can talk a little bit more about that, because that's like a really good question.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And the short answer is yes, absolutely. There's a lot to learn. And I have so many questions, some of them just coming from being a vintage guitar nut and having curiosity. But then there's a lot to learn just about what was their product mix like. And this is, again, the pinnacle of craftsmanship, you know, of the old days, and you realize that they're creating not only solid body electric guitars, they're still creating arch tops and flat top acoustics and amplifiers. In Kalamazoo, they were also doing like accordion equipment. The first synths were developed in Kalamazoo, so like keyboards and whatnot, and all of this is being shipped at the same time, and it's all represented in one way or another in the shipping ledgers. So just getting a sense of that is really cool. And then also just kind of reminds us of the company that Gibson was and that we're returning to, which is a focus on our strengths and returning to our roots of craftsmanship. And in our product portfolio, how many opportunities we have that we were doing long ago that we may have lost sight of since then.
Yeah. Now, I know you guys mentioned, and it's everybody I think who cares about this stuff knows that 643 number, which I think came from that Tom Wheeler book from like 46 years ago or something. Have you guys encountered anyone in this community who remembers or thinks they saw this ledger book?
I could take that one. Cause one of my good friends and mentors is Andre Duchessois, who wrote, you know, one of those early books along with Tom Wheeler, that really piqued my interest on this in these in the first place. But Andre is the first person who I spoke to who had direct access to the ledgers at Kalamazoo in the late 70s. And he said, like a lot of people, it's like he wasn't seeking out those books, but in his memory, he cannot remember ever seeing the actual 59 ledger book.
Oh, wow.
And so he said, you know, I really believe that if it was there, I would have seen it. And this is, I don't remember the exact year, but it's right around 79. So end of 70s, start of 80s.
Wow. Okay.
So that's, I mean, that's the best info I
have. I mean, anecdotally, Jason, you know, talking to Walter Carter and other sort of historians, where they say that anecdotally, you know, having talked to people that were there, again, I don't know whether this is them just saying this or even their sources were just saying this, but there are stories of people saying that they had the book, that they looked at it, and at some point they held that book in their hands. So it's a bit of an enigma.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stories.
Yeah, I mean, this Les Paul community is not, I mean, there's thousands of fans, but it's not that big when it comes to this 59 geekdom thing. Someone out there must have it.
We think so.
So the offer is $59,000 cash reward, and is this just an open-ended thing, or do you guys want this year, or is there an expiration?
No, I don't think that on purpose. I didn't put an expiration date on it. I think it'll be an ongoing thing. I mean, it might just show up immediately, or it might take 3, 4, 5 years, or it might never show up. Mm-hmm. We don't know.
Well, very cool. I think one of the things that a lot of guitar lovers, myself included, love about where Gibson is going these days is you have this thirst for your history, and you're passionate about where you guys made, when you made great guitars and how you did that. What have you guys bought recently? Maybe it's in your personal collection, Cesar, that you've been recently geeking out about that was obtainable for the Gibson archives.
That one, the 1962 Les Paul that shouldn't exist. Yeah. That was my last purchase. I was geeking out about, and with Matt too. In fact, only also because it came with the person that sold it to me. I don't think he knew also what he had. First of all, the fact that it was a 1962 Les Paul, but also it came with a Caligirl lifting case. So that was Matt was geeking out about that case for ever until I took that guitar back home, but it was in the office for a while. I had it refretted because I really wanted to play it, and those P90s sounded killer. But when we looked at it, Matt and I went into the ledgers, and it's 1962. So remember, the Les Paul name is taken by ESG.
Sure.
So now we're in 1962. And we found it, and it wasn't just one guitar. It was, I think, back-to-back 10 of them. So back-to-back serial numbers. And do you want to take a guess on how they were called?
No.
The ledger?
What were they called?
So remember, 1962, it's a Les Paul special.
Sure.
But in the ledger, it says SG special.
Ah, all right. The origin.
Make it even cooler, because now I learn, this is a new learning to me, Matt might have known this already, but for me, the SG comes out in 1964.
Yeah.
As named as the SG with that shape that used to be called the Les Paul. But in fact, they used the SG name in 1962, probably because, I don't know, Matt, what your speculation is, if it was couple of employees that found these bodies left over there and said, we'll buy them, or they had leftover Les Paul bodies and somebody wanted them and they said, okay, we'll make them for you. I don't know what you think, Matt, about that, but the fact that in 1962 we used the SG name.
Yeah, a lot of mysteries are solved by the ledgers, and others are new. Like, that's just the discovery of that batch of guitars in 62. It seems a little anachronistic that that body style, which was supposed to have been discontinued, persisted and was given the SG name ahead of when it was used on the Devil Horn body that we've come to love after that. So
wild.
Pretty interesting stuff. And I'll just add that I recently bought a 1937 L5, and I bought it because it was a beautiful guitar, and I'm 36, but I feel like in my old age, I've come to love the old archtop guitars. But but I had an inkling that it was one of the very first blonde L5s when I purchased it, but I had no idea if I would find it in a ledger book. And not only did I find it, but it unveiled this beautiful story of it. It shipped to the United Kingdom originally, and because it had a customized tailpiece, I was able to track down the history of the original owner. So it's awesome what those books hold and what it means to our fans.
Nice. I love those guitars. I had a black L10 from that era that with the picture frame inlays that were, I love that. I still miss that guitar. I know you guys got to run. Cesar, you mentioned a couple of things that you guys have been launching over the last few months, all of which have been amazing. The Gibson TV coverage is just so cool. I love that you're doing that. With NAMM not happening and Summer NAMM not happening, anything coming down the pike that you want to tell us about, or should we just stay tuned?
Well, today we went live, so it's streaming now, Icons, Jerry Cantrell.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a number of really cool initiatives coming. I've made it official that we're going to be launching the Adam Jones replica and collaboration with Adam.
Nice.
And we've got something, I don't know, Matt, how public information it is, but I'm okay mentioning to Jason because he's a friend, but later in the year, we're going to be doing a tribute to Jimi Hendrix. We've been working with Janie and the estate with the Flying V and the White SG.
Nice.
Coming out of the custom shop.
Nice.
I don't know, Matt, if you're okay with him printing that.
Yeah, I mean,
Jason, you can be the first one to write about
Jimi Hendrix. All right, there you go.
Well, obviously, we've been working with Jerry Cantrell quite a bit on what's going to ultimately become and announced early next year about his overall collection across all brands. Matt finds it odd, given my heavy metal, hard rock taste, that I really, really love, are the Kirk Douglas SG and the Slim Harpo 330. And, you know, Slim, there's such a cool story. Jason, you should connect with Matt and talk about the Slim Harpo.
Sure, I'd love that.
Reissue, because that's a story in and of itself. I mean, it's just a cool
story. I think that one,
that's a cool story.
It's going to come out later in the year around holiday time, but it's got, that's a guitar that really tells a story, and I love that stuff.
Cool. Yeah, reach out to me, Matt. I'd love
but
to hear
one
more.
One thing, Jason, that... one thing that we didn't talk about when it comes to the ledger is if we end up retrieving the ledgers and we end up finding a Modern, because all we have is the patent drawing.
Yeah.
We got the patent for a Modern and all these, you know, again, as much of the 59 ledger being an enigma, the Modern is also an enigma.
Yeah.
And what if we, you know, find a ledger and then we find a Modern? How epic would that be?
Amazing. Got to get the search warrant for Billy Gibbons.
Yes. Billy.
Well, thank you guys so much. This was amazing, and I love following you guys and seeing the guitars. It's so cool to have passionate guitar people behind one of the most iconic guitar brands around. So thank you.
Thank you.